Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi guys, welcome back to the Just For Today podcast, where we dive deep into uncomfortable topics with zero filters. Today I have a really good friend here with me, the one and only Samuel Harness. Thank you so much for coming out here to hang out with me and talk to me. It means so much.
Happy to be here. I'm happy to be here.
Me and Samuel met we never met, actually. Yeah. We just met today in person. Yeah. But we met on social media about 2 years ago, I want to say. It was shortly after Eric died. And my version of us meeting is I made a reel to your song, mm-hmm. How to Save a Life.
Yeah.
First of all, I found that song. And man, the amount of times I listened to it, like just crying in bed. Because it really, like that song and Eric... It just reminds me so much of him.
Yeah.
So, I found your music on Instagram before I even created a reel or anything. And it was very healing. It was really, really, it was just so nice to have that. And yeah, I created a reel. It got a million views.
It blew up.
Yeah. And then I think one day I just like hopped on Instagram and then you started following me back.
Yeah.
And then we became friends.
Yeah. Isn't that wild? Because then my version of it is that I had put, you know, some covers and originals out and you made a video and my sister sent me the video that you're referring to. And at that point, it had already had over a million views. And she said, yo, I recognize your voice in this. This is crazy. And she thought the story behind it was, you know, really interesting. And so I watched it and that was my first exposure to what you had been going through and living through at that time. And just to see the fact that, you know, my voice was able to be a part of your story. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. It was, it's so cool. Like the friendships you can make on social
media. Yeah. Fast forward. Isn't that crazy?
I know. That's so crazy. Wild. Cause like we did become friends. We would talk every once in a while, always checking in on each other. And it's like, I know social media can be a dark place also, but the friendships you can make.
Oh yeah.
So cool.
It can be a good place.
So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself for those that might not know you and your story? Who is Samuel Harness?
So my name's Samuel Harness. I'm 30 years old. I'm a singer-songwriter. I am one of five adopted kids in my family. My parents adopted five kids. And I got into music when I was really, really young. I played sports all growing up. I was hardcore, like travel baseball, basketball, everything. But I had always had a passion for music to the point where, like, you know, I would go out on the country roads. I grew up in the country. I still live in the country. And I'd ride my bike for miles and miles just listening to songs. Like, even if I didn't know the song, I really liked the melody. That's just how I connected with music at a young age. And so fast forward, when I was a little older, I got the opportunity to be on show The Voice. And I placed top 20 on The Voice. I went on American Idol about a year after that and did pretty well on that show. And ever since then, it's just been a full-time gig for me. I've been able to, you know, live off of my art and my ability to create, which is such a blessing because it's really, really difficult to do these days.
Oh, yeah. That's so amazing. So amazing. So what year was it when you went on The Voice?
Yeah, that was the year 2021.
2021.
Which was wild because after 2020 and the whole COVID thing, the whole world shut down. I got an email in 2020 and I thought it was a spam email. Yeah. I got something from The Voice. They were like, hey, you know, are you interested in auditioning for the show? And I was like, this is so dumb. Yeah, right. This is not real. And I got a couple more and ended up getting in contact with a real human. And they were like, yeah, we're totally trying to get you on our show. Like, that would be awesome if you would come out and audition. And that's kind of how it all started. So just from the worst year for like the whole world turned into something that was going to totally change my life.
Yeah.
Which is wild because at the start of 2020, I didn't know what live music would look like anymore. Right. Cause nobody knew what anything was going to look like anymore. It was just the start of a stay at home, kind of thing where they called it in Indiana. It was like hunker down Hoosiers. Mm-hmm. And so that's what they labeled it. And so everybody was, you know, staying at home. And I just really thought live music was just not going to be a thing anymore.
Right.
But like it would just be all online or something. And,
right.
It's just wild how, everything ended up working out.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
after that.
So amazing. So during 2020, during COVID, did you have social media? Did you have a following then already?
I didn't have the biggest following at that time. I'd always, you know, I had done some modeling and kind of dabbled in music here and there, but social media was not a priority for me. I didn't see the importance. I didn't even have a TikTok in the year 2020.
Oh,
like,
wow.
And that was when it was like called Musical.ly or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't have TikTok. It's only after I was on The Voice that they were like, you should probably make a TikTok. Like, I'm pretty sure people would follow you on there. And I was I don't even know what it is. So after 2021 is when I started, and now it's worked up to, you know, like almost like 600,000 people
That's
are following
amazing.
Me on TikTok alone.
How could they not? Oh my gosh.
It's wild.
Got to hit follow. So, how was The Voice? How was your experience on there?
It was good. It was a lot different because, I mean, growing up, I was homeschooled, and then, you know, I graduated from a public school, but just kind of having the baseline of being homeschooled, and I'd always been really anxious as a kid and very introverted. And so finally to have a moment like that where it was like, okay, if music's going to be your thing, this is one of the biggest stages we can put you on.
Yeah.
That was just what was in line with my life. And, I knew I was living in my purpose. I don't know if you've ever felt that before, but like, when you know you're in line with something that you're supposed to be doing. And so getting out there, I had no idea what kind of song I would audition with. I had no idea what the outcome of anything would be.
Yeah.
I was just there following my heart and following what I thought would, you know, be the best in that moment. And it ended up really changing my life. But the whole experience was great. I got to work with John Legend Ed Sheeran and Camila Cabello.
That's
and
so cool.
Just a whole bunch of cool people, and
you
meet a whole bunch of other cool contestants, and you make lifelong friendships with all those people. And it's a really big opportunity, but for somebody from a really small town like me, and I had just been playing, you know, live gigs here and there at little bars and breweries, to be on one of the biggest stages in front of, you know, the entire world is just, it was very surreal.
Yeah. How do you prep for that? Like, how do you prep, like, oh my God, I am about to perform in front of John Legend and, you know, like all these people. How does that, I feel like I'd be like, nope, pass
that's
out.
What I, yeah, that's pretty much, I can say that's like what I felt like. I don't know. I can tell you, like, when I got on stage and I sang, I can only remember maybe two like weird flashbacks from it. Other than that, it's almost like I blacked out,
like,
because there was just so much pressure around that day. This, I mean, coming from, like I said, coming from a small town, but then also after realizing who you're singing in front of, like Ariana Grande, John Legend, Blake Shelton, Kelly Clarkson,
oh
like these are huge names that you're singing in front of, and these people could change your life.
Yeah.
And so that pressure on top of, I want to make my family and friends proud, and I know what I'm supposed to do. I hope they like my voice. Like all of those little, you know, insecurities and thoughts that I was having kind of just caused me to black out during the performance. Like I finished the performance, but like, I just remember the moment that I heard John's chair turn. And then I heard Ariana's chair turn. I heard Blake's chair turn. And I was just like, I had opened my eyes at that point and like saw them looking at me. And that, I remember that moment the most.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's like everything was almost like a blackout. Like,
oh my God.
Just so much pressure and so much anxiety and just trying to go through the motions. But what I wanted to remind myself on the show was like, this is what you love to do.
Yeah.
Just make it muscle memory. Like go out there and just do what you know to do. You know how to sing.
Right.
You know how to perform. Just go out there and do that. And it sounds way easier than it was. But.
So does it performing ever get, obviously that performance, you know, you're performing in front of big celebrities, does it get easier? Like, does performing get easier for you as time goes on? Or do you still always have, like, when you're about to go perform in front of a crowd, like, oh my gosh, is this really?
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
What's happening?
Yeah, I still get just like a natural, I think it's good to get it. I kind of get just like a natural anxiousness. It's more excitement, I think.
Yeah.
It's what I love to do. I love performing. I love singing. And so I just kind of hype myself up with excitement, not as much nervousness. I'd never really felt nervousness like I did when I did audition for The Voice. Yeah. Like I had never felt that. And so then a year after doing The Voice, I did American Idol. And I felt way more confident in the process and understanding what goes on behind the scenes.
Right.
And at the end of the day, you're singing in front of human beings.
Yes.
It's Ariana Grande, but like she's still a human being as much as, you know, people don't know these people personally, like they're human beings too.
Yeah.
And so trying to have that reality in the back of my mind the whole time really helps.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just like for performing, you're singing in front of people who just have a platform, but they're still human beings. So it got easier and easier over time.
Yeah.
Wild experience.
Yeah. That's so cool. That's so cool. I wouldn't even know what to do with myself.
It was crazy.
Just be like, oh my gosh. And then like when they turn around, did you have to keep singing?
Yeah. You keep singing. Cause like I wasn't done with the song. I know. Like that, I felt like at the end of my song, like towards the end, like I was really trying to hold it together.
Right.
Cause like, you're so nervous, and then once they officially turn, it means they want to work with you, and so it's like, okay,
but
the job's done, but
going.
I have to keep going, and I gotta keep sounding good, and then you remember there's all those other people watching on TV too, millions of people, so there's a lot of pressure.
That is so cool. What a cool experience.
I love it.
That is great. So going back to your childhood, you said you are one of five adopted. Where do you stand in that?
I'm exactly in the middle.
Exactly.
So I have two
older
siblings and two younger.
Okay. Anyone else do music?
I mean, my dad, plays mandolin and he was in a family bluegrass band for a while and I had grown up watching them perform every once in a while and more playing at, you know, family events or little festivals. And then my mom, I grew up listening to her play piano. She can play piano really well and she can sing. And so just like having exposure to that, it taught me, you know, the little, I guess you say nuances of music and just like what I liked and didn't like. And I taught myself how to play piano and guitar and I just had to teach myself. So I've never known how to read music or anything like that. I just taught myself just based off what I was hearing. So my parents and then my older brother had a guitar growing up and I would always sneak into the room and play his guitar.
Yeah.
And I'd get caught and I'd get in trouble and I'd do it again. And, all my sisters like music, but none of them have pursued it as a career or anything like that. I'm the black sheep, the one that just decided to step out and I do the crazy thing.
Yeah.
You know, all of them have really good jobs and like they're all professional and everything. And I'm just over here strumming acoustic guitars for a living. So
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So, how did it feel? So you knew you were adopted, right? Growing up, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Did that shift your perspective on life as a child? How did that, that affect you?
Yeah. When? I mean, now's when the interview is going to start getting deep. being adopted, for anybody who might be watching this that's adopted would understand too. I think it's different for every single person who's adopted. I know that my sisters have a different experience than I do. They have different feelings about their birth parents than I do. I turned 18 and my parents made kind of like a little rule for all of us kids is like, when you turn 18, you can, you know, if the opportunity is available, you can pursue trying to find your birth parent if that's what you want to do, you know, and we'll answer questions that we can. We want to cultivate a healthy experience for you. So my parents were very gracious in that way of just allowing us to kind of pursue answers.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me being 18, 16, 17, 18, those years were really formative for me. Just those were the years that I first went to public school after being homeschooled. And so I had an exposure to a world that I had not seen before. I was homeschooled and I just never knew the world was as harsh as it is.
Right.
And it sounds bad, and I don't like to say I was sheltered, but I guess I might have been growing up just in that world.
And I can only imagine like how hard it is going to a public school at that age too, because I feel like kids at that age.
Oh, they're the worst. It's like so brutal.
Yeah.
They'll say anything, so it's like, which is wild.
You're just really being thrown into the.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. Yeah. And I mean, it was necessary because then my mom started working at Chick-fil-A more. And, you know, my family's really into Chick-fil-A. And my parents, you know, do their own operating thing now with Chick-fil-A. But for me at that age, I wanted to meet my birth mom because I just wanted answers.
Yeah.
Those are like you're 16, 17, 18, you want answers to everything, even things that don't have answers, even, you know, things as an adult, you grow up and you realize that there's not going to be an answer or resolution there. That was what I wanted. So I pursued trying to find my birth mom, and my parents knew who my birth mom was. They knew, you know, her contact. They knew how to get a hold of her if that day would come that I wanted to. And so I did. I ended up going out, meeting my birth mom and meeting my birth family for the first time. I don't know my birth dad. I'd never met him. I think that's a situation that he was just far removed from everything. But yeah, I met my birth mom, and it didn't go how I planned. I mean, when you're that age, you have all these expectations, and I went into it with way too many expectations to the point where it just kind of crumbled me. And that's when I first realized, first of all, expectations can really hurt you.
Yeah.
And secondly, humans can really hurt you. You know what I mean? And I had this idea in my head that my birth mom's going to be perfect. And that this perfect person who I'm going to get all these answers from. And she's human too.
Yeah.
And she went through a whole bunch of crap in her life. And I just didn't find the answers I was looking for. And I did not find any resolution in that. And so I came back and I told my parents that, you know, I didn't know how I felt about it. And so then I went and stayed with my birth mom one more time. Then when I was maybe like 19, 20 years old in Missouri, they lived on top of a mountain at that time in Piedmont, Missouri. And so I moved out there and stayed with them for like a month and just really wanted to see what real life was like for them. I wanted to know what they're really like, you know, when... Yeah. You know, my parents aren't there, nothing. Like, I just want to know what the real was. And just long story short, it just wasn't, again, what I believed it to be. And I think at that age, I was really still navigating myself, learning myself. And so I had a lot of pent up anger and a lot of confusion and a lot of questions that I just didn't want to deal with. And so I coped with making music. And that's really when I started making music. When I was like 19 years old, I started to want to write and pursue music full time because I had done so many different jobs in my life. I had, you know, done mascot for Chick-fil-A. I had janitor. I've done clean, you know, I've done so many different jobs. And I just didn't find fulfillment in any of them. And I didn't find fulfillment in work. I didn't find fulfillment in pursuing my birth mom. I didn't find fulfillment in alcohol. I pursued alcohol hard just because it's what I thought you do at that age. You know what I mean? And
was
like,
this after meeting?
And then, that was after meeting her. Okay. I just started kind of dabbling in alcohol and trying to figure out like how to numb myself. I started smoking cigarettes. I was smoking like a pack a day. It was wild. It got out of hand. It got so out of hand that I started having like health issues, and I found myself in a relationship that wasn't healthy and just kind of all spiraled out of control. Like just one bad decision on top of the next. And I kind of swept myself into a corner, I guess you could say, just like a lot of mess, and I wasn't willing to go through it and sort things out. And so I covered it with alcohol and smoking weed and cigarettes and women and anything really that could just take me away from
how you're feeling,
how I'm feeling in the in the moment, you know, any temporary pleasure. And so that's when my life really started to take a turn in the way that's like it could be really dangerous, it could be good, it could be bad. Like that's kind of where all my music comes from. It's just a lot of those years.
How you coped and how you dealt with like.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Certain things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So growing up, did your parents ever tell you anything? Like, because I know you said going into meeting your bio mom, you had all these expectations. Growing up, did your parents give you any info as to, like, why you were adopted, who your mom was, what she did?
Yeah.
Did they give you any
I mean, a little bit. Like, it's not that they inflated the idea of her in my head. It was more of, like, just myself. Like, because I had all those questions, my parents told me, you know, we know who your birth mom is. This is her name. This is where she's living right now. You know, she's got, you've got some half siblings and things like that. I think I just put those expectations on myself. They just told me the general details of, like, you know, she exists and this is where she's at and blah, blah, blah. And she'd love to meet you and all this. But then I, you know, I had conversations with my birth mom and just, like, through those conversations, it wasn't what I expected.
Yeah.
And so that's where I really learned again. Like, it was all on me. It wasn't that she was a bad person. It wasn't that, you know, my parents had said anything false. It was just me putting all of those expectations into my mind and then going full out into believing it. And then when I met this person, my birth mom, it was not what I thought.
Yeah.
And so I would say it's my fault that happened, but I think,
I don't think that's fair to say it was your fault, you know, cause you are expecting something, right? Like you're expecting something, and just cause it didn't go the way you thought it would, it's not your fault. I think it's just, you know, you would have liked that. Like you would have liked to have closure or like feeling of, you know, like, we didn't talk about this on camera, but you mentioned that she had other children, right?
Yeah.
That she kept.
Yep.
And you were kind of like, why me?
Yeah. I have other like half siblings and like that are older than me. So like, obviously she had kids before me, and that was a really big thing for me. And it still is. I mean, I still think about it sometimes, but I don't dwell on it as much as I used to, but that was a big, that was a big issue. Like for me, at 18 years old, my main question was like, why did they get to stay and I had to go?
Yeah.
And so we did talk a little bit about that stuff and kind of just how I was conceived and just like the situation around it. And I know life happens and, I know that she was in situations that, you know, she couldn't control, but I still, I held that resentment for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Just like, you know,
if
you don't want me, you know, whatever. Yeah. And so then like when my career took off, I was like, I hope she doesn't reach out and like try to come back into my life.
You know,
I would, I just like, it's all
weird. Is it for the right reasons?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's all a weird internal battle and it's, I don't expect it to ever go away.
Yeah.
I just expect to, cope with it a little bit better each day.
And you're saying at 18 is when she told you like, this is why this is it. Right. So you're an adult, you understand a little bit more, but I can only imagine like as a child knowing these things, like you can't comprehend. Like,
no,
you
you're not even supposed to be able to comprehend that.
It's so how, like, I can't imagine being a child and thinking like, well, why does she have my siblings and not me? Like you can't.
And it felt weird to go to my parents then, who adopted me, and to have all these questions, because it's like, I didn't want to be like offensive or
like,
you know what I mean? Like, what can I say? Yeah.
Like,
it's like, I almost felt, and I know I can talk to my parents about anything and say anything, and
they're
very loving, but it just was, that was a big struggle for me at that time, at that age. It's like, oh, I don't want, I'm grateful that you guys have me, but I want to know more about her, like this back and forth.
Yeah.
And it's just like that weird back and forth.
Yeah. I feel like that's just so much trauma on a child. Like, you know, you shouldn't have to live that at that age. Like, I feel like I say that about my kids all the time, too. Like, they're so young and it sucks that they have to live through this, know this much trauma at such a young age. Because kids' brains aren't, you know, we can't process that. So, like, all those, I can imagine, like, thoughts of, like, well, okay, I'm not good enough. Like, and then it just kind of goes into everything.
Yeah.
You're doing
literally everything,
you know,
and it can shape you as an adult.
Yeah.
And so like, I for me, I told you this off camera, like, I'm very thankful that I've gone through these things because it forms you as an adult, and it kind of forms your opinions as an adult, and it matters what you do with those, that hurt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can take it and turn it into something that's useful and helps you carry forward in life, or you can allow it to completely crumble you.
So. I think that also goes to show how different everyone is, right? At like dealing with situations. Like I heard this one time after Eric died. I remember someone was telling me a story and they're like, well, there's these two brothers that both come from an addict, like, and their dad was a complete alcoholic, narcissist, like asshole, treated them like shit. But he was drunk 24/7. One of the kids grew up and he was like, I'm never touching alcohol because this is what it did to my family. This is how it made me feel. And the other brother turned out the same way as the dad. So it's like everyone internalizes things so differently. Yeah. And, you know, it's not a matter of right or wrong. It's just you. Like, it's you personally. For like, how can you deal with this? Like, you know, the son that turned into an alcoholic, that was his way of coping with it. And the other son, his way of coping with it is, I'm not doing that. I'm not treating my kids this way. So, you can throw two people in the same situation.
Come out completely different.
Completely different.
Yeah. It's wild.
So it's crazy how that happens. But I'm happy that, like, I know I must hurt, but that you found the good, you know? Like,
yeah. And I use it as fuel.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? I use it as creative fuel.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm thankful for art in general and music, is because I can use those things as creative fuel rather than fuel that's just sitting there and could be lit at any point. And, you know, I could just die in that and just crumble away. For me, I turn it around and put it into my music.
Yeah.
So a lot of the songs that I write, I have this song that is called Help, and it's like one of my most popular original songs right now. And just like, it's really a prayer, because in the year that I wrote that song, I was just crying out for help, like, just to God. I was just like, you know, if you can hear me, if you can see how bad this is going for me, can you do something?
Yeah.
Do something. Can you hear me? I'm crying for help. And I, you know, that was the first sign that music is going to be like my outlet.
Yeah.
I was able to put that all into words, and I was able to feel it 100%. And the song didn't like blow up the day I put it out.
Right.
Like, it took years, and then all of a sudden somebody found it and connected with it. And I realized, oh my gosh, if one person can connect with this, then I'm happy.
Yeah.
And it just so happens to be, there's a lot more.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's like the great thing about your music, is it's so like raw and vulnerable that so many people can connect to it in their own way.
Yeah.
You know? And like, I feel like that's the power of music, is like feeling deeper than like feeling the lyrics in a deeper way.
Right.
Like that connection.
Which is that's how I found you and like your story.
Yeah.
And just like music, words, like melody, all of that. It does something. It strikes something inside of us that connects with our story.
Yeah.
And you know, your story has nothing to do with me, but it almost feels as if we do have so much in common because of that.
Yeah.
Which is
amazing. So crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that's a whole other, I feel like, you know, it's so crazy how I feel like certain things are like meant to be, or like, you know, like you're so connected with
it's
people
wild.
And like certain things, and you're like, oh wow. Like,
Yes.
And thanks to Instagram, because I literally would have never met you if there wasn't. Isn't that crazy? You know? Like,
that's wild.
So,
and that my sister sent me the video.
Yeah.
Like, my sister's the sister that sent that to me. She's not a big social media person or anything. So for her to find something and, you know, think it was a good, you know, it presented well and sent it to me, and she's like, this is your voice behind it. I was like, that's crazy.
That is so crazy.
Gosh.
I did not know that's how you, that's really cool. It's social media, it has its good.
It does have its good.
So,
it's
yeah, definitely it's bad. So let's go back to the alcohol and addiction part. You said that kind of started after the meeting with your bio mom, and then, you know, just like knowing that it can numb some things. Would you say, like, what was your rock bottom when you were like, okay, this is not, like, what?
Yeah, my rock bottom was probably the year 2017. I had just found out I was going to have a child with somebody that I was not in a good relationship with. And that was probably my most rock bottom moment. Now, not the moment that I found out I was going to be a dad. That is such a high area. But what was happening in those moments in my life is where I was at rock bottom. And to add such a big responsibility and such an exciting thing on top of all that, I felt so unworthy and so unprepared. Yeah. And it just was so difficult for me. I ran away from it for a long time. In fact, I found I was going to be a dad and I moved to Colorado. Within like the month of finding out, it was wild. I didn't know how to respond. I was kind of going through like a weird manic episode in my mind. I just had no idea. Like, okay, now this is going to be a reality. I've got 9 months to prepare. I got these things going on and I was drinking. I'd never told anyone of this before, but I was doing like, I was intoxicated when I found out I was going to be a dad. And so like, it just was a reflection on where I was. Yeah. Like, it was terrible.
Yeah.
And I was drinking all the time. I was hanging out with people who wanted to drink all the time and smoke. And I would wake up in the morning and for breakfast, I would drink beer. And then for lunch, you know, I'd take a couple shots of vodka or I'd put it in some orange juice. Like, it's just what I did because it, like, took off this weird edge all day. And I wanted that. But then it just took its toll. It pushed me further into a bad relationship. It caused me to treat others, the people that I loved the most in my life, to really just push them out. I didn't want to talk to my family. I felt a lot of shame. I didn't want to be honest with anybody about what I was going through. I felt like I lost my relationship with God at that time. I felt like I was going to be a shitty dad. Like, there were just so many feelings in those moments that really were like rock bottom moments. And I just kept coping with alcohol and drugs. And so, about 2017 was where I really hit some of my lowest points in my entire life.
Yeah.
2017, 2018 were some really, really hard years. But this also around the time, I think it was like 2015 or 16 that I met my birth mom. So it was like right after all of that all too. So I had all so a culmination of all of these stressful things happening, in my life all at once.
Yeah.
And it kind of just leaked over into the next thing. And then it's like, I just kept making the wrong choice.
Yeah. Cause you're it was not the healing easiest. Or you're not like dealing with it.
So yeah. Not at all.
Leaking into the next thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think, being adopted kind of made you want to run from being a dad? Like, do you think that impacted you at all? Of like,
yeah. I mean, I was scared to be a dad because like, I mean,
cause I know you have great parents that raised you and you grew up with,
which is
so
exactly
like, was there any point in your mind where you're like, kind of thinking like, oh, I'm doing what my mom did?
Well, no, it was so backwards because like I grew up with really good parents, the best parents you could possibly have, still the best parents I could possibly have. And I have a great relationship with them now. They're my best friends. But at that time, I just wasn't grateful for that. And so like, I just lived according to what I wanted. So I was really angry. And I think being adopted definitely had a lot to do with it. Just the questions and the uncertainty of being a father. I hadn't been a father yet, you know, just not knowing. I didn't want to make the same mistakes that my mom, you know, had made with me. I didn't ever want to, you know, have my kid come up to me and have all these questions and like, so, you know, what were you doing when I was born?
Right.
And why didn't you keep me and all that? You know, like there were just so many things that I didn't want to repeat.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I used it as a little bit of fuel later on when I realized what was happening and I kind of could get a grip on like my thoughts. I started to realize, you know, like this is an opportunity to be the best dad possible. It's an opportunity to be the best artist possible. It's an opportunity to detach yourself from the things that are hurting you. What really changed everything for me was coming to the moment that there's some crossroads. You can either let this eat you or you can, you know, let it be a part of your story.
Yeah.
And so for me, I wanted it to be a part of my story, but I didn't want to, I didn't want these issues to devour me and devour my fatherhood and
control you.
Yeah, and consume me and just like my addiction and all of that. And so, I mean, I'm sure you felt the same way. Like, I can imagine, you know, losing the love of your life and then all of a sudden it's like, what do you do after that? Yeah. That could just eat you
away.
What do you do after that?
Yeah.
And that's why I've connected with your story so much, is because it's such a rock bottom moment to get a call like that, you know, be rushing around and not know the answers. And you know, so I really related to your story in that way too.
Yeah. I think it also goes to show you like how strong your mind can be and like how it really can fuck with you. Like it can make you feel like shit and like, you know, so unworthy. And so dark. And sometimes that's hard for people to relate to because they haven't gone through that. You know, they like haven't, you know, lived.
It's
with
good
demons.
For them. Thank God.
So,
you don't want to.
So good for them. I know. That's what I say every time, like, I get a mean comment of, like, someone, like, oh, my gosh, I would never, like, remarry or you're dating again or whatever. Like, I would never do that to my husband. I'm like, how lucky are you to not know?
Yeah.
Like, good for you. Like, I hope you never have to find out.
No, that's
because you, if you don't know, you don't know. Like, it's not.
Seriously.
Yeah. So.
And that's what's weird about death, and I feel like adoption, both are very. If you haven't experienced them in the way that you and I have, or in something really close to you or somebody very close to you, you can't even explain it.
You can't.
Say what it is, but you can't say what it does to you and the physical effects it has on you and the mental effects and the emotional. Yeah. And just like, there's no way to describe it.
And it's so much like the emotional, not just emotional, I should say physical toll, that like grief. Because
did it do to
you're grieving.
Did it physically affect you like a way, like just not wanting to eat,
like,
kind of stuff?
I mean, it was bad. Like, so when he died, I lost so much. Like, I didn't eat. I didn't get out of bed. Like, I don't even think I brushed my teeth or like took a shower for months. Like, it was so bad. And then like afterwards, after a few months, it was the opposite. I was like eating my feelings. So then I gained a whole bunch of weight. So it was always like, you know, like just one thing after another, like I would get really bad. I mean, I always had migraines, but I'd have like migraines and like stomach aches. And there's something called broken heart syndrome. I don't know if you've heard of it, where you literally feel like you're having a heart attack.
Yes.
Yeah. So that happened to me quite a few times. And I remember the first time I experienced it was leaving the funeral home after viewing his body. And I'm in the car with my cousin and I was like, I think I'm dying. Like, I think I'm having a heart attack. I was like, my heart like is hurting me. Like it feels like it's breaking. And I like couldn't breathe. I was like, I think you need to take me to the hospital. Like, it was so bad. And then that's when I like read into it and they're like, oh, people like actually die of
that. Oh yeah.
Because it's so physical.
Like, and it affects and, like the left ventricle or something. Yeah.
It's so crazy. And even like now till this day, like around his death anniversary, like it was in March and I wasn't thinking it would affect me so much. His birthday was a few days ago. Mm-hmm. And it's like my body feels it and I can't do anything.
Do you get that like physical sensation where like you're abs like don't loosen up, like are you like kind of like sweaty or
yes whatever? Like always like so tense.
Jeez,
like in a way. And it's like so weird because my kids, like I can tell they're off too. Like
really?
They 100% feel it. Like all last week Emmy was like an emotional wreck and I would like, I mean, we're really open about everything and like feelings and stuff, and she's like, I don't know, she's like, I can't stop crying.
Whoa.
Like I'm so angry, I'm this and that. Whoa. And I was like, oh, like putting two and two together, like, well, your dad's birthday is like Saturday, you know. And then like Saturday too, she was just like crying and she's like, but I'm, you know, like I want to buy him a cake, but like it makes me cry, you know. It's hard.
That makes me want to cry.
It's so sad, like knowing you can't take that pain away from your kids.
Right.
But yeah, so grief is really, if what that's the one thing I've learned after Eric died, grief is very physical. Like it's not just emotional. And like I said, you're grieving a life you never got to live either. So like certain things, you know, people don't realize that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, adoption is a very it's not commonly spoken about.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't ever see anything about it online about somebody saying like, this is what I'm coping with when it comes to adoption. Like I don't, now maybe I could search it out or something, but I've just never seen it as an open conversation.
Yeah.
It's like, it really messes with your mind being adopted, and it totally has its physical effects.
Yeah.
So.
And I feel like I can, you can almost like you said, put it like with a death. Like if you're a child, you know, and you're adopted, it's almost like your parents are dead. Mm-hmm. Like you literally.
Yeah. You kind of have to write them off in your parents. Mind in that way. Yeah. Yeah.
But then at the same time, you're like, no, but they like didn't want me. So it like brings up
yes.
so much. So yeah, why it should be talked about.
For sure. And that's the way that's great that you say that, because that's a great example. I had to essentially, you know, I met my birth mom, you know, things didn't go the way I planned. I essentially put it in my mind like a death. Like yeah. I just, that's not part of me at this point.
Yeah.
I pursued it. It's not
yeah.
an open door that I, you know, can yeah. go through. So I just had to write it off. Kind of like you just have to accept yeah. it, you know,
yeah. and
how do you accept that?
Yeah.
Cause that's the person who birthed you and supposed to take care of yeah. you and supposed to play all those motherly roles. But you know what? I'm so thankful that I have the mom that I have now because yeah. she's 10 times better and,
yeah.
you know, just loves me to yeah, bits and pieces.
Yeah. How amazing to yeah. be able to.
And then from their that. Perspective, not being able to have children to being able right. to adopt and say, you know what? I don't care what your situation is.
Yeah.
I'll love you
that's
as my own.
Beautiful.
There's two beautiful situations yes. going. And so it's definitely, I think all my siblings have gone through their own process. Maybe they still are. We don't really talk about it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we've all gone through our process.
Yeah.
Some a little bit more openly than others.
Yeah. But. And now hearing you say that, I'm kind of wondering, like, if adoption isn't talked about as much because, you know, like you get adopted by this beautiful family and you're grateful. So I wonder if people are like almost afraid because they don't want to make their adoptive parents feel bad or like
feel oh, so you're not like appreciate you're not, me now
yeah,
or something.
Exactly.
And that's not what it
and
is.
It's not what it is. No. Especially as a child, you can't help these feelings yeah. that you're feeling.
No. And
you
there
know?
Are things you had to process
yeah.
when you first learned all that. So
yeah.
there are things that are going to stay with you. Yeah. That's
yeah.
a great point.
So
and it's
I
really
wonder
hard.
That if that's
it's
why.
Like eggshells, walking yeah. on eggshells sometimes.
Because you don't want to be ungrateful, but at the same time, it's like, you're not like, this is your reality. This is shit. It happened.
Yeah.
It hurts your feelings.
Yes.
You have these feelings.
They're valid. And,
they're so
yeah.
valid. Just
yeah.
like I always say, grief and joy can coexist. Like
yes,
it's the same 100%. Thing. Like you can be so grateful for them, but you can also be like, what the fuck? Like
yeah.
why did you get, you know?
Yes.
So
100%.
That's interesting. No, I never really.
It is a weird paradox because
yeah.
you find healing in some areas that are never going to heal. You
yes.
feel like, you know what I mean? So
yes.
it's like you're constantly going back and
yeah,
forth.
Yeah. Back and forth. I know.
yeah. It's wild.
Oh my gosh. So when you were in your addiction,
mm-hmm.
you said your family did not know because you kind of like pushed them away. Do
yeah.
you think they know how bad it was?
I think they knew.
Okay.
Like, I think that they knew. I never fully came to my parents and said, like, I'm dabbling in drugs and I'm
yeah.
drinking myself to sleep every night.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hate the relationship that I'm in and I don't want to do this anymore. And, you know, I don't know what to do career wise. And I never came to anybody and said that full out. But I think my parents knew. And in fact, I have, somebody who I've been working with ever since I started making music in the year 2017 is, his name's Sam. He's done all my producing, all my mixing and mastering of all my music. He's the only person I let work
yeah.
with my voice. But, there were times it got really dark. It got really bad. And I don't think the world obviously doesn't know this because I've never talked about it openly, but there were times I was taking pills and I'd go to the studio and like, I would wake up at the end of the session. He'd be like, dude, like it's time to go.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what was happening.
Yeah.
Like I had just taken drugs and I just I was just going through motions. There was another time that I went to a birthday dinner for a sibling of mine and I don't remember anything about it. I know that I ordered food and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, I was nodding in and out. I would say I'm tired or, you know, I don't know. So I'm sure everybody around me knew,
yeah.
but I,
so what are you taking? What pills are you taking at this point?
I was taking like Klonopins.
Okay.
I was taking, alcohol with the Klonopins.
Yeah.
I was taking oxycodone, really anything
yeah.
at that point that I could get my hands on.
Right.
I never did any like heroin or anything crazy
yeah.
hard.
Mm-hmm.
Even though those drugs are hard,
yeah.
but I just did what was ever available.
Yeah.
Acid, shrooms, pills.
Yeah.
And the terrible part was it got to the point where I didn't even ask what it was. I would just
yeah.
do it.
That's so
and
scary.
That's really, really scary.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know. It just got really, really dark for a long time. And thank God I was able to get out of it, because I can't even think of the moment that I specifically was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, I quit everything.
Yeah.
It was a long process. But then once COVID hit, at that point, that's kind of when reality started to hit. Like, either you're going to get a job, like, the world's shutting down right now. Like, I had no idea what's going on. And so that was, once The Voice reached out, like, literally everything started to really change for me. And I had a glimmer of hope.
Right.
And so I stopped drinking, which sounds crazy, but I did stop. I stopped drinking cold turkey.
How was that?
Pretty brutal. Yeah, I had some like detox symptoms and things that were happening, and I stopped doing pills. I live with the consequences of those choices still mentally, every once in a while, you know, physical issues that can come from being addicted to things like that.
Yeah.
So I still live with those things. And one of them is just like an uncontrollable anxiety.
Yeah.
I never had it before. I thought I had anxiety before and I would drink, but like,
now
it's like, oh,
yeah, because you have anxiety.
It messed with my nervous system like no other.
You don't deal with it.
Yeah.
So, and now you're like, oh shit, this is what I have to do.
Exactly. So now I'm living with that. And like, I found a lot of comfort in just like, I'm very holistic now. I just, I am a big believer in cold showers. I take a lot of cold showers, cold weather, you know, I'll jump out in the snow.
Yeah.
And, I try to eat as clean as I possibly can, unless I'm traveling or like I'm doing something fun like this, you know, I gotta go get like a milkshake or something. Like, I try to have fun.
Yeah.
So I try to like balance being human with trying to be as healthy as I can.
Yeah.
And so like, that's a big leaf that I turned over, is just my entire health.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Took a major hit, and I had recently lost like 70 pounds. I put on a whole bunch of weight, kind of like what you said, like I started to eat my feelings, drink my feelings.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just, there was a moment that I was like, this has got to stop or my life is going to stop.
Yeah.
I'm going to die. And there were a lot of moments that I felt, while detoxing, I felt like I was going to die.
Yeah.
Like, you feel so miserable, and not the kind of miserable like, oh, I lost $100, I'm so miserable, or whatever. It was kind of like what you're describing, and I hate to even equate it to it, because I've not lost a significant other, but just like that broken heart, like, when you're detoxing, your body is just flipping out.
It's crazy.
Flipping out. And so I felt as if I was dying, physically dying. And I felt like the walls are closing in, that my heart was going to stop beating, and that it was go so slow. I could feel the pulse in my head and my face and my hands. And I was sweating, and it was just really, really difficult. And all while being in a bad relationship during those years, I couldn't go and like lean on that person and be like, this is what I'm going through. And can we,
gosh.
They had their own issues too.
Yeah.
So we're just all human. So,
Oh man. Yeah. I can say that, seeing someone detox, has to be one of the worst things I've ever seen in
really
my
painful.
Life.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not going through it. So I can't even imagine going through it. Like, just watching it is freaking painful. You're like, there's literally no way to, it's like one of those things, like, you don't know unless you know, right? And you've seen it. But, like, I mean, I would tell Eric all the time, like, this hurts me so bad. Like, he was a big man. He was tall. He was, like, big. And I'm like, I'm seeing you. Like, I'm seeing my man here who's capable of so much. And, like, you know, like, you're so... Like, it sounds dumb, but like, you're a strong man.
You're strong,
you can
but then all of a sudden,
build
this
me a house.
Thing is like taking you out.
Yeah, and then seeing you like cradled
so
up in the fetal position, like crying, throwing up, like literally so vulnerable. And like, he would say the same thing, like, I would rather die. Like, I would rather die right now than
that's
keep
how I
going through
feel.
This.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Gosh.
And he'd be like, no, like, you need to let me like smoke this or like take another hit. Like, I'm gonna die. And then, just like literally seeing the life come out of that. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard. So that's one thing too, that like really frustrates me about people that are like so quick to judge addicts, you know, like, cause you always hear like, oh, well, they did it to themselves.
Yeah.
Like, oh, if they didn't want to, they wouldn't. Like, well, do you think someone wants to wake up and like, you know, go shoot up some heroin?
Right.
Or do you think like you want to wake up and drink a bottle of Jack. Like,
right.
No, but no. You physically have to now.
Yeah.
Because
yes.
You feel like you're
relying
dying.
On it. Yeah. For sure.
And people do not understand that. And that's like the one thing that really irks me. Because like, I know people are so dumb. And like when it comes to that stuff, or like some people can be so like closed off to that and just not sensitive to that. But it's like, you literally have no fucking idea.
Oh yeah.
Like you can die from a detox.
I'll be addicted till the day I die.
Yeah.
To like, I will consider myself an addict, and I don't know if that sounds bad or not, but like I will die an addict. It doesn't mean I'm actively addicted to those things, because thank God I'm not.
Yeah.
And I've been able to be delivered from those things, but I still get addicted. Like, I try to take those addictions and turn them into other things, like riding my bike,
and,
you know, cycling, and like, I want to drive into something and take that. You know, whether it's work or my music or, you know, physically and just working out or, you know, being a dad and all these things, those all take a lot of energy. And so I'm able to do those things better because I put all of my energy into that instead of trying to balance an addiction with all of those things, you know, the addictions that I had before. So,
and I think that's so important for like people that do have an addictive personality is, you know, like you said, you're always an addict, right? And you have to find the good, like you're saying, like the good, you have to be addicted to the good. So like, you know, when Eric wasn't in active addiction, like with heroin or fentanyl, like he was still addicted to
looking for a high. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always
and
looking
like,
for a
and
high.
And like, or it's always like something like he would go to the gym. Like there was this part where he had to go to the gym like 2 times a day, but he's like addicted to going to the gym. Like you have to do this.
Yes.
Or, he was like really big into juicing, but it was like an addiction. Like I have to do this. Like, so you're fixating on something, but you know, you're not doing like the bad, you're fixating like on other things, but it's still an addiction. I think that's just the personality.
I don't, you know? I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I have, and I don't believe that'll ever go away from me. And I'm sure Eric, you know, probably would have never gone away from him. You know, that's just like what happens when you're addicted and you're an addict of anything.
Yeah.
You know?
People just don't. I just feel like people would.
It's not talked about enough either.
No, it's not.
It's really not talked about enough.
It's not.
I, especially growing up in the family that I grew up in, like, you would never catch any of my, like, you would never think that with my family.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the way that they present themselves. And, you know, I just, I isolated myself. Addiction starts with being selfish. You're selfish. You want to feel good yourself.
Yeah.
But then it turns into an addiction that becomes selfish, and you're not trying to be selfish, but it's calling you and okay, I got to do this, but I'm going to try to be as present as I possibly can with you right now. I'm trying to show you, like, it's a back and forth thing.
Yeah.
I hate that people hate on it.
Yeah, I know. It's
it really, not a good thing to be addicted.
It's not a good thing, but it also like
can have some grace.
My heart. Yeah. Like be graceful, you know, like, and that was my hardest thing too. Like I remember when I first found out that Eric was like on drugs and I was like, okay, like just stop. So like, I get it. Like I get those people, but at the same time, like living through it, you know, like I remember in the beginning, I was like, why are you doing this to me?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, wait, this has nothing to do with me. Like this, he's not doing this to me.
No.
Like he doesn't want to do this.
It's not because of
you. It's not because of me. And it is just such a hard mindset. But I wish people could just be nicer, because it's not easy. And I feel like that's another reason why addicts also feel like they can't come out and like ask for help, because you're so afraid of how you're going to be approached when you do ask for help.
For sure.
Or, you know, like it's I can only imagine. It's scary.
Like, I think it's even more scary, like, if you have a platform of people that are watching you and like looking up to you, and, you know, I find
you
that you have to be perfect. Yeah, it's just it just doesn't exist.
Yeah,
you know,
internet
perfection.
Trolls will just go off.
Yeah,
and that. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with the hate?
I don't know if I even deal with it. It's like I'm pretty secure in who I am now.
Yeah.
I've decided who I am, what I stand for, and what I live for, and what my values are. And so, I made that an addiction of mine. It's just discover who you are and become, you know, just ultra obsessed and addicted with becoming the best version of yourself that you can be.
Yeah.
for yourself, but also for, you know, family and for your friends and for everybody that's involved in your world. So for me, I don't know. I mean, online is just a completely different world. I was telling you earlier, like, people recognize me most places I go. At this point, I'll have somebody come up to me, but I, online, it's like, it's the Wild West. Like, anybody can say anything.
They can say
like,
anything.
Those keyboard warriors, you know? Yeah. So, like, I don't know. I don't, I try not to let the internet dictate my mood.
Yeah.
As hard as that is, and, you know, it would sound easy.
Right.
But when your job is working on the internet all day and you're creating content and you're looking for opportunities to, you know, create content and your job is based on others' perception of you. That's really freaking hard.
It is.
That's really hard. It's like, don't become obsessed with doing things that how you're viewed with other people or other people's opinions.
Right.
But here's the job based on other people's opinions.
Yes.
And it's like, what?
I know. It's you know? So, it's like a mindfuck. Because you like really do go like back and forth. And I do feel like you do have to be in that place where you're so secure with yourself that when you do get these like internet trolls and like all these people saying things to you, it's like, I don't care about you. Like,
yeah.
You wouldn't say that to my face. You wouldn't, you know, like, but I mean, we're human.
We're human. We have insecurities. So I like, I'll think about those things too. I'll be like, wait, like, do I actually?
Like, like,
you know,
certain things I'll be like, ooh, I will think about it for longer than I would want to.
Yes.
But yeah, I feel like you do have to be like really secure in yourself and it's hard.
How do you deal with it? Do you, I feel like you don't, you address things.
Yeah.
Like if somebody says something, you're not afraid to address things.
No, I, I like, I think,
so, are you a confrontational person? When it needs to be.
When it needs to be, yes. Yeah. So I'm very chill. Like, I'm very chill, you know, I, like, I, it's not like I go looking for confrontation. I really don't like confrontation.
Right.
But if someone were to say something to me or someone, like, kids or my family, I will absolutely, like, you know, address it. And
better
not in a mean way. Like, I will, you know, like, address it, you know, and but if it comes to that, it does, because I feel like people feel like they're so like entitled to every little thing. And I don't know.
Have you become more open to being confrontational or just direct with how you feel and how you speak to people since Eric died?
Yes.
Because it's like, it's just like, there's no BS.
Yes.
Like, this is how he died.
Yes.
He's dead.
Yeah.
And this is the reality now.
Yes.
Let's just speak in reality.
Yes.
Rather than this fantasy of like, well, if this didn't happen, no, this is the reality.
Yeah,
do you find yourself being more of that
Absolutely. Way? So, like, before Eric died, I would say I was more of, like, a people pleaser. I was confrontational to the point if, like, someone said something to, like, my family or my loved ones, then it wasn't, like, confrontational, but, like, I'll let you know that, you know, like, I didn't like that.
Right.
But not so much myself. Like, if people said something to me that I didn't like, I'd kind of just, like, brush it off, and I was, like, more of a people pleaser. But, yeah, definitely after Eric died, I was like, no, you know what? Like, I don't have to deal with your shit. I don't. Like, if I don't agree, if I don't like what you're saying, like, then you deserve to know that.
Yeah.
You know? And that was, like, one of the big things, because I was on social media before Eric died, but I only had, like, 30,000 followers, and it was, like, about motherhood stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, like, gain most of my following after Eric died, and so I had known, like, a little about the, you know, internet trolls and stuff, so I was like, I can't share things unless I'm, like, fully prepared.
Yeah.
Especially with addiction and all these like stigmas, like people are so fucking mean.
Yeah.
So yeah, that took a lot of work on my end, but yeah. So like now when people say shit, I'm just like, they don't know. Like half the time these women talking shit are still going to bed with their husband at night. So they really have no fucking idea like what they're talking about. Yeah. And I'm like, so that's what I say. I'm like, you're lucky. Like, you know, good for you.
Hard.
Like, I'm glad that you don't know that pain, or then you always have, like, these guys saying, like, you're so easy, you're a slut, because you started dating and blah, blah, blah.
What the heck?
Like, if my wife ever did that, like, I'd want her to wait, like, 10 years. I'm like, wow.
There's no rule book. Like, first of all, show me the rule book where somebody wrote this down,
and
it
like,
has to be fact.
Why would you want your wife to be miserable for
and
10 years?
And be alone
years?
With children?
Yes.
Find a masculine presence that helps. Like,
Yeah.
No,
I'm
that
like,
totally
well,
makes sense.
If any, no one's going to be looking for you. So.
Right.
You're not the type of man we need. So it's okay. But yeah, I did start this thing of like my weekend warriors. Well, like pick out my favorite ones of like these people that, you know, talk shit, and I'll expose them. So I'm like, okay, like if you want to sit here and talk shit, then I can expose you because you know, there like you. I won't blur out their names and like oh, yeah, usually my comment it. People like the people that comment are like, thank you so much
for oh, blurring out. That's
so I'm funny. Like, okay, so you can get a little taste of your medicine, you know? Dang. Like, yeah. So I did start doing that because I'm like, you guys are just
a little deterrent. There. Yeah. A little yeah. public shameful deterrent.
Yeah.
There
yeah. You go. So that's been fun. Oh man. But yeah, so it's just hard. Like, you know, people don't understand what they haven't gone through. So
yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. So when it comes to mental health, how are you doing now? Like, I know you said you got to like a really dark place. Would you mm-hmm. say you ever got to like so dark where you're like, okay, I want to die. Like, I don't want to be here.
Yeah. I mean, as sad as that is, I've definitely tried taking my life into my own hands.
Have you?
For sure.
Multiple times or?
More than once. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
And was this like after the, like in your adult life, would you say? Mm-hmm. Like after meeting your mom mm-hmm. and yeah.
Yeah. One crazy thing is, that, you know, I really wanted to die for a while, and I hate talking about it because I'm not in that place anymore.
Yes, I know God. What that feels like.
You're I
like,
hate even talking about it. It's like, why did I even get to that point? Yes. How did I even get to that yes. point? I got to the point where, like, you know, I wanted to kill myself, and this is very graphic, so I don't know if you'll keep it, but I tried hanging myself and the branch broke. So I was like, that's a sign that I guess I'm just not doing that. And so, like, while I was outside, like, the branch literally broke. I didn't know where else I was going to go. I didn't know what else I was going to do. And the branch just snapped then, too. And I was like, okay, well.
I'm meant to be here.
Yeah, I guess. So yeah, it got
at
to,
that moment, it, you're not thinking that,
it
right?
It got
you're
like, to what that point. That's just how dark it yeah. got. That's yeah. just how dark it got.
Yeah.
And like I said, right before 2020 and on, things got way better. And it's yeah. not because of the voice, but there were things related to just finding my identity in music mm-hmm. and finding the opportunity. God gave me the opportunity to then put my talents on a bigger stage. That's when, you know, took my mind to different places and learning new things and new yeah. people and new ways to cope. And it opened doors for me to meet new people that were going through things like you, that I could kind of bounce my perception off of, kind of like, you know, the motivation that you give out, you know, and just coping with loss and things yeah. like that, you know, and just yeah, that's it really got bad. Really bad.
Yeah. So what would you say to someone, because there's a stigma around suicide too, right?
Yes,
we all know that
big time.
It's so selfish. It's yeah. not. But that's like yeah. the stigma around it, right? Like, yeah. people are like, it's so selfish. How could you do that? Like, you have family. What would you say to people that think that way? Like, that do have that kind of mentality? Like, that's so selfish of you. Like, how could you even think that? Like,
I mean, what I would say to somebody looking from the outside is, first of all, you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know what somebody's going through in the first place. I mean, I have siblings who don't even know certain things about my life, and I don't know certain things about their life, because it's just, you just really don't always know.
Yeah.
And anybody looking from the outside or hearing how dark, like, it's gotten even for me, I mean, look at my life now. I don't have a bad life. I love what I do, and I still struggle with sad thoughts.
Yeah.
It's not that it's in my control.
Yeah.
I know that there are a lot of people who are smiling and hurting on the inside, mm-hmm. and you just never know.
Yeah.
That's really, and it's so cliche to say, it's just, but it's so true, you really just don't know.
Yeah.
And it could, you know, for me, I didn't come out and say it to a lot of people, and I never was 100% honest with everybody about how bad it got and how low I was getting and how bad the addiction got, because of the shame that comes along with even saying it to family members. This is yeah. what I'm going through, and this is what has happened, and here's what I've attempted, and like, I just hate it, and I need yeah. help and all this, because there's like the side of you that's saying, well, you seem fine now that you're talking yeah. about it. Like, you seem fine.
Yeah.
Well, what? No, I have the energy to be explaining it to you yeah. right now. Like,
it's not always going to be like
that. It's not always going to be like that.
An hour from now can be different.
For sure. And yeah. that's really scary. And,
yeah.
So you just never know. Just being kind to other people and just, yeah, just never jumping the gun on, like, what you think the problem is with that person. Because I mean, I could look at somebody like you and be like, she has no issues.
Yeah.
She seems perfectly happy, pretty, nothing bad in her life. And reality is, you know, your husband has passed away from such a dramatic situation, and that leaves you with scars then for the rest of your life and coping and mechanisms and all of that. I would never see that just by looking at you. And so, you know, just having that mentality of just looking at people and understanding that we all have our own story and that we're all, you know, just going through our own things. And then what I would say to anybody who feels like they don't want to be here anymore, I would say, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. And I would say, find what you find the most peace in. As far as something outside, for me, it was music.
Right.
I find a lot of peace in music, even if it was just for a temporary moment. And that's what I dove into. And so if anybody else has an outlet of an art or, you know, running or working out, like, I would much rather somebody be addicted to going to the gym than addicted to going to running to pills and things like that, you know? And it, you know, it's not always good to fill one addiction with another, but there are healthy ways to cope.
Right. Healthier habits and healthier habits.
Yeah. Things that can benefit you.
Yeah. It's definitely, obviously we both know, easier said than done, right?
Way.
It's like when you're in that dark depression, that's another thing. I feel like it gets mixed up a lot with laziness because people are like, oh, you're just like laying around. You're literally not doing anything to try to make yourself better. But you cannot.
No, exactly.
Like, you physically cannot. You can't.
No.
So if, you know, like, you are going through that dark spot right now and, like, you just got up and walked around your house, like, good for you. It's the little things that you have to praise yourself for. And I think that's so important for people that are struggling with that to know right now. Like, the smallest thing is a win. Mm-hmm. Like, it really is.
Yeah. And
even, you know, like, your family, your friends, whatever, they might not understand, but there are people out there that get it. And I think it's so important to find at least one connection. I know I talk about this on here all the time, 988. Like, I use that.
Really?
Like, when Eric was going through things, I did. I called them, I text them, and you don't know who's on the other line, but it's like, they actually do care for you. So if you feel like, I feel like I preach that all the time. If you feel like you're in, like, a really dark place and you're like, I don't want to be here anymore, reach out to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And tell them that.
Even if it's the crisis hotline.
Even if it's a crisis hotline, like, it's just nice knowing that there is someone there to talk to you. Like, even if you don't know them. And I think another thing I'd say is it won't always hurt this bad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really also hard to think of when you are hurting that bad. Because you're like, there's no way. Like, you know, it's not going to get any better.
Yeah.
But yeah, it won't always hurt this bad. And, like, for me, like, people that don't understand it, because I also attempted and you're not thinking of everyone else.
No, you're not.
Like, you're, it's not like we're not being selfish. We're not like thinking like, oh my gosh, my mom's gonna be so sad like when she wakes up tomorrow and I'm like dead in the room. You know, like, you're not thinking that never once crosses your mind. It's, we're just so, that's how bad it gets. Again, like, you're in a place where you're hurting so much and you're like, this is the only way.
Stop. And it's not that you don't care about other people. It's just that you want the pain to stop.
Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah.
And that is where I think that the stigma is not fully understood.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't think people that have never gone through it. I remember one time, my parents are pretty traditional. And, you know, one time my dad saw, you know, some scars on my arm.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, younger, high school. And he was like, what the heck is that?
Yeah.
And he just didn't understand.
Yeah.
Because he'd not gone through it. And he wasn't rude about it or mean, but he just didn't understand to ask about it and, you know, asked about it. And I had no explanation because I just don't, I don't know.
Yeah. I feel I like just, I like, was the same way too. Cause my parents were pretty traditional.
Really?
So it was kind of always like, well, why would you be sad? Like, why? Or like, why?
Yeah. I didn't know what anxiety was when I was a kid.
Same.
I hated talking to people. Nobody ever said, he's got a little bit of anxiety right now. You know, whatever.
Right.
There's a term and label for everything these days, but as a kid, I was just deemed quiet. Like,
Same.
Whatever. Now I think back, I'm like, dude, I just had so much anxiety just in social situations. Yes. Like, you know what I mean? So
yeah, that was me too. Yeah. And I feel like even in high school, like I wasn't like, I was just so afraid to be in like larger crowds. Mm-hmm. And I would just always feel like, I remember when I played volleyball and, one time, like those were, you know, my girls, those were my close friends because they were on my team. So that was like really all like the friends I had. I didn't have anything out of that. Yeah. And I remember one time we were going around like saying like what we thought of each other when we first met. And my really good friend, she was like, well, I thought you were a bitch. She's like, what? You were just like resting bitch face.
Like RBF.
Wouldn't talk to anyone. Like people would like talk to you and you wouldn't say anything. And I'm like, that's probably what everyone thought of me.
Wow.
But I wasn't. Like, I was just so afraid, and, like, I was just socially awkward. I don't know.
I felt the same.
So, yeah, it's...
I felt that way, too.
Oh, man.
It's wild.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, you were in a really bad place, and I think, you know, like you said, things led to more things and, like, worse and worse, and it seems like you're in a much better place now.
I for sure am. Yeah. So I'm so thankful for that. That
plays a big role.
It does play a big role, and it plays a big role in the way that, that God has shaped my life and, like, what I can do now to serve other people.
Yeah.
And my music can serve other people, and I'm in a season of life, I was telling you, and, you know, Kevin just... I'm in a place where I'm learning to create art for myself and for the enjoyment of my own rather than creating the next viral song or creating this because that person really liked this or, you know, singing this style because they like it. Just trying to get away from that and creating art to be art.
Yeah.
And that is very freeing as an artist because it doesn't go away. I have to create. Like it is an itch. It's an addiction. It's an obsession. It's a deep rooted therapy for me.
Yeah.
And so for me, I have to write, I have to sing. I'm born to perform. I'm born to entertain. And if I don't do that, then I'm not living within my purpose and I feel very out of it.
Yeah.
You know, very disconnected.
Yeah. And it's so important to just like stay true to you. I think that a lot of people see that, you know, and that's where you get those deeper connections is, you know, people love the vulnerability, the realness, and the rawness.
Yes.
And
that's important.
It's different.
It's missing a lot these days because everything is like, you know, people are so invested into either themselves or their phone or their image on social media.
That's a big thing.
And it's like, what if you were to take your life and just live authentically?
Yeah.
You know, I've gone through addiction. I've gone through my past. I've, you know, had my relationship with God. I've done my religion. I've done all the little pockets of life that, you know, you people want to get into. And at the end of the day, it's like, who are you?
Yeah.
And who
would
do you,
you be happy
to be?
With
would
yourself?
Would you be happy with yourself?
Yeah.
And I heard a quote the other day that somebody said, like, just pretend you're 80 and you got the chance to come back to this day. How would you live this day?
Yeah, I saw that.
And I'm just like, wow,
I
would live so
when
differently.
I read that. Yeah.
Yeah. If I, I can live to 80, I'd be so happy.
Right.
But I'm also just like, it gave me perspective on live life to the fullest and be your authentic self.
Yeah.
Within reason.
Yeah, I know, right?
And don't shove it on other people. But
right.
I just think we live in an era of just not real authenticity. Yes. We are either over authentic and we're saying, look at me because I believe this. And like, it's all about me now. And who I decide to be. Or there's the people that are like, dude, screw that. Like, I don't want to hear about that BS. And it's like, there is a middle ground in there and it's called being yourself.
Yeah. Genuine.
Yeah. Right? Just like, be genuine. And so that's what I'm very passionate about is genuine connections, genuine music, genuine conversations.
Yeah. Same. And I think that's why we get along so well.
Exactly. Exactly. You just talk about really anything.
I know. It's great. Yeah. It is great. So what is next for Samuel Harness?
Well, great question. I'm going to continue to release music. I've been writing a ton of new music. So I have a whole bunch of new songs that I'm ready to put out. A whole bunch of new covers. I've been touring around. So right now, obviously, I'm in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'll go to the Midwest and I'll do my little scene out there. And I'll just, you know, hop around and play shows. And that's really where I find a lot of my value is just... Yeah. And my identity is in music. Like. Yeah. It's where I find myself. And so I'll always be performing and releasing new music and hoping that people can connect to it. And if they don't, they don't. But, yeah. You know, I've worked really hard to cultivate the audience that I have now. Yeah. And I just want to, keep doing what I'm doing and keep being me.
Yeah.
I would love to do it on bigger stages and all of that and just continue to allow things to grow.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I'm hoping that conversations like this and getting out more and just allowing people to see a deeper side of me
will help. I think so. 100%. Yes. Because, you know, people will be able to relate more than just the voice.
It's just music stuff right now.
Yeah.
It's been just music stuff. So I'm hoping that conversations and people see, you know, I am human. I don't just make 30-second clips of singing and that's it.
Right. Yeah, well, I'm so excited for you. I'm a big fan. You know that. I can't wait to see what else comes out.
Yeah.
So why don't you give us all your socials? Drop your handles so people can follow you.
Yeah, if you want to follow my music, if you want to follow my journey, everything is under Samuel Harness. So if Instagram, Samuel Harness, Facebook, TikTok, everything, even Google Samuel Harness. You'll find my music, you'll find my story, and you'll find this episode at some point.
Well,
and I'm just thankful to be here. And
thank you so much.
Thank you for having
for
me.
Flying out here and hanging out with me.
This is great.
And we're going to go get kids and do some other fun things.
Yeah, this is going to be
hang
fun.
Out. I know. Yeah. I'm excited. So thank you so much. We'll also tag you. So everything will be tagged. Definitely do yourself a favor and follow him because, man, the music is, the voice is just.
Thank you.
Thanks again for hanging out with me.
Yes, of course.
Thank you guys for hanging out with me. And if you want to continue to be a part of these conversations, don't forget to like, subscribe, follow, do all the things. And don't forget, just for today, keep going.